These statements have not been evaluated.
Log Talk Radio.
Milk butter is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
My name is Robert Gluck. I am a practicing trial lawyer and have been specializing in helping people who have been injured in all types of accidents for the past 20 years. I handle cases throughout the state of Florida. Recently, the legislature in Tallahassee has changed certain laws, and insurance companies are now taking advantage of those changes, resulting in much lower offers on personal injury cases across the board. It is now necessary to file a lawsuit to get a fair settlement on these cases. Before you settle your case for less than what it's worth, let me review it over the phone or in person with you for free. If there is no recovery, there is no fee. Call now for your free consultation at 954-583-8999. That's 954-583-8999.
The hiring of an attorney is an important decision that should not be based solely upon advertising. Ask for free written information about qualifications and experience. The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of its host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
This is the Rockers in Recovery radio show, dedicated to news, interviews, events, and festivals taking place in the rock and roll industry and in the world of bands and musicians who support recovery. Find out more by going to HolisticLifestylesRadio.com or join Rockers in Recovery on Facebook. Now, the host of Rockers in Recovery, here's John Holler.
Hey, hey, welcome to the show, and of course, we're glad that you could make it tonight. Rockers in Recovery is proud to have one of our sponsors with us tonight, Robert Gluck. You've never heard Robert on the Rockers in Recovery show. Usually you hear Robert on the Holistic Lifestyles radio show on a Friday afternoon. We're bringing Robert in that night, and we're going to replay this show Friday afternoon, but the good news is that Robert has a lot of expertise, 20 years plus, 25 years plus, of course, of expertise in law. And prior to him even becoming a lawyer, he was skipping school and actually going down to the courthouse. He's the only person I ever met in my life that actually cut school. We used to cut school, and we would go to, like, the lake. Robert would cut school and go to the courthouse. So this was, like, dedication from a youth, or youth. As my cousin Vinny would say, Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You know, again, Robert has been around a long time and has dealt with litigation as a trial attorney and is very aggressive. And we are going to talk tonight about vicarious liability. Vicarious liability, just to give you a little rundown, it's like the secondary liability, correct? Is that how that works out?
Yeah, it's basically when one person is when a person's responsible for the actions of another person, even though the first person wasn't directly responsible for the injury. And we could take that to, there's many examples of that. Parents' responsibility for the actions of their children, employers' responsibility for the actions of their employees, manufacturers of certain products and their responsibility for the products that they manufacture, churches and their responsibility for the actions of their clergy.
Nice.
All kinds of different areas.
Well, this and it brings up a point. I just went through this myself at the beginning of the school year. My son came home with a waiver and said to us, you know, if I'm not going to be able to play soccer unless you have this waiver. And we had to show proof of insurance. There was all types of things that we had to do for him to be able to play soccer. So let me ask you about how important is it? Because, you know, this falls right into vicarious liability. If I sign that waiver, he gets hurt while playing soccer. How does that affect us if there's, you know, litigation later on down the road?
You know, that in Florida, there was a big problem with that. The issue is this, is that if a parent signs a waiver, the waiver, most times when usually it occurs when a kid is going to do a dangerous activity, a sports activity, or go jet skiing or go horseback riding or get involved in some activity that the party that's running the program is going to require that waiver to be signed before they're going to let a kid participate. So what happened in Florida is the parents would sign the waiver, and basically the tourist industry was up in arms because what happened was is the courts in Florida said, hey, you can't sign away your kid's right to bring a claim if the party that's running this endeavor is negligent. We just had an example where a kid admitted he forgot to put a safety net out, where this kid dropped and fell 150 feet. Unbelievable that she lived.
Yeah.
But if that was in Florida and if there were waivers signed, but what happened was they said, the parents, you can't sign away your kid's right to bring a claim if some party, someone does something stupid like that and they get really injured.
Mm-hmm.
But then the tourist industry went to Tallahassee, and this is how politics works in Florida. And last year they said, if you don't change this law, we're all leaving Florida because we can't run a business like that. If we're going to be responsible for our own negligence, we can't operate profitably.
That makes sense to me.
So they reinstated the right of a parent to sign a waiver for a kid. So now a parent signs a waiver, and if that happened with this drop case, there'd be no claim. So Florida is swayed, the legislature is swayed by the political pressure of the lobbyists for the tourism industry.
And you also have the effect of, you know, when you go into any type of gaming, fun sport, I don't care what it is, may it be parasailing, may it be whatever it is, you're usually signing off on something.
And those are dangerous activities. Yeah, they're dangerous activities. But all I'm saying is, if just because it's dangerous doesn't mean that if they do something really stupid and they don't maintain their equipment or they allow something to happen to really injure you, you should be able to get compensated for that.
Okay, so even if you have a signed waiver and it's their negligence, listen, you're up 400 feet in the air and the cord's cut loose on your parasail. I mean, is this...
Waivers are enforceable.
There's no way around it.
And the reason that the cases went to the Supreme Court of Florida is because they had these kids who had turned into quadriplegics, and one of them was a parasailing case, and they ruled that the parents signed the waiver, the kid has no claim. So it just went up on a fairness issue. This kid should have to be able to have a right to recover money if he's a quadriplegic as a result of someone not maintaining the equipment or allowing or using it for so long that it ripped. And
so let me get this thinking, because I'm having a hard time with this thinking.
All right.
Okay. The state says we would rather have them on state disability and state funding, and having the state disability and state funding take care of them, and we don't want to have the company that this originated from take care of them because we might lose their business.
Right, and it's not going to get any better because we just elected a governor that's on a platform of making sure that businesses are protected. How best to protect businesses than limiting liability? And we're getting to, I guess this is really important at this point, that now that we have a new governor coming in, but what's going to happen is he's going to do everything that he can to encourage there to be laws to be passed to limit all liability, as much liability as possible, to encourage companies to come to Florida. But what does that mean to you and me? What that means is that if you're the victim of something that's done by one of these companies and they're protected by the governor and they're going to pass laws to protect large corporations, individuals like you or me or like a kid that gets injured at an amusement park, their rights are going to be put on the back burner to their detriment, and it's going to be big business that's going to benefit from having a strong Republican governor that's... I mean, it's okay to be pro-business, but it's another thing to say if a business is negligent, they're not going to be responsible for their actions.
Well, and that brings up that, because I own my own business.
Right.
You own your own business.
Sure.
So we want some business protection here. We want, you know, from the business aspect of it, protecting the business is a good thing, and I don't think there's been a whole lot of mainstream protecting of the business. So, and in one way, I think it might be a good thing, but when you start looking at it from your end, it could be a bad thing for your business.
And it can. There are many areas where they are doing everything they can to protect businesses.
Mm-hmm.
A premises liability claim, they've changed the laws on that recently. If you fall if you fall and you get hurt, you have the burden of proving that whatever it was that you fell or got hurt from had been there long enough that the store should have known about it. You can't just hold them responsible because it's their store. So that's protecting business, and that's okay. I'm okay with it because that's really saying they shouldn't be responsible unless they should have known that something was there.
Okay. So now, does that bring in, like, the slip and fall?
That's really what it was designed to do. It was It was designed to help the food industry that lobbied in Tallahassee and said, hey, we're paying out too much money on premises liability claims.
Yeah.
So they changed the law to favor business.
Well, let's move this a little bit somewhere else because,
okay.
I mean, it's and we'll come back to this, but this brings up a point where if you look at the current health care situation in America and what they've kind of like pushed in our direction right now, do you agree with the current health care and what they're doing with the health care situation and what they signed into law?
Well, I agree that we have no idea what's going to happen because the Republicans are going to come in and try and undo everything that the Democrats did. So I have no idea what's going to end up being.
Well, do you think it was a good law?
Personally, no, because I think that the government shouldn't be running a healthcare system. They can't even run the things that they're trying to run. They can't even run.
They're having a hard time up there, you think?
You know what? So they should take on baseball and decide whether people lied about being on steroids or not, because that's important for our country, right?
Absolutely. I get crazy. I sit in the morning, you know what I mean? I sit in the morning with my cup of coffee, and I watch, like, the news networks. Because, you know, of course, I want to get sick by 10 o'clock. Yeah.
Right.
I want to be crazy out of my mind by 10 o'clock. And usually I'm mumbling to myself, and my dog looks at me like I'm nuts. But the reality is that all of the different things that we're talking about right now, perfect example, yesterday, Wisconsin, that kid goes into a school with a gun and ends up holding a classroom hostage for, like 6 hours? He started at 1:30 in the afternoon, but he has a gun. He's 16 years old. He's got a gun. Now, he ends up killing himself or shooting himself in the head. I don't know if he had died yet or not, but they were saying pretty close to death today. Here's a kid that's 16 years old. If this law that we're talking about tonight, would it apply that, you know, God forbid he went into that school and he shot 15 people? Are the parents responsible for that kid's action?
Well, in Florida, in order to hold a parent responsible for the actions of the kid, you have to show that the parents should have known that something was going to occur and failed to do something to stop it. For example, if your kid has that many weapons in the house,
mm-hmm.
you got to know it is. If you got to clean the room, I'm not saying you got to turn mattresses, but you've got to know if you've got a child out of control, and if you do, you've got to take steps to remove weapons from the house. And I can tell you one thing that it's not going to stop a plaintiff's lawyer from filing suit against the parents and even the manufacturer of some different types of weapons that it could be argued have no legitimate purpose other than for something like mayhem.
And, you know, you have Sheriff Al Lindbergh is on the station every Sunday at 2 o'clock. And they just went through this big thing here locally with a kid that they found with a bunch of guns under his bed. And I think there was some, you know, illegal things that had taken place. I don't know if he had named somebody or killed somebody, but the end result is that, you know, Sheriff Alan Birdie's like, well, you know, I think the parents might have, you know, found out that he had a 9-foot sword under his bed. You know, he had, you know, multiple guns under his bed. How would the parents not know that?
You see, but the law disfavors, in the criminal side, it disfavors holding people responsible for the actions of others. Only in limited circumstances in a criminal situation can you do that. So if you were going to hold the parents criminally responsible, there is a state statute that says a parent has to have a locked weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And if their weapon's accessible, if the parent's weapon mm-hmm. is accessible to the kid, then the parent's responsible criminally. But to say that a parent has an affirmative duty to take affirmative action to inspect the child's room and to uncover things, you know, to pull the floorboards out and look for hidden compartments where he might hide guns, I don't think the criminal law is going to hold a parent responsible to that extent. Although the sheriff, it would be easier for the sheriff if parents felt the fear that they could be.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure he wants to plant that seed, but you're never going to find a prosecutor in modern times prosecute a parent for that unless it's their weapon. But if the kid obtains the weapon without the parent knowing,
Yeah, without their knowledge. But the other part of this is the liability, and of course is what you deal with. So,
and their parents are going to get sued, and if they don't have if they own assets and they own property and they don't have umbrella insurance.
Talked about this not too long.
Yeah, then they're going to be exposed to that. So there was in addition to the parents, a plaintiff's lawyer, if there's a situation where somebody is killed or left a quadriplegic, it's the duty of the lawyer for the family of the injured party to uncover any stone and unturn any stone and try and find any potential liability. And in that situation, it potentially could be the manufacturer or the parent. The manufacturer of a weapon was brought into the lawsuit involving the Saturday Night Special that was used to kill the teacher up in Palm Beach County. They lost that civil case against the manufacturer because the jury in that case decided that the manufacturer had a legitimate purpose for their weapon and that it wasn't foreseeable that it would be used for criminal activity.
So that being said, when you start to move forward with some of these things, it really has to be like, you know, the closest person to you, basically, as far as the secondary, because this is all secondary. So let's say I'm working for a business, and I'm in the business, and something takes place in the business, like, you know, I get mugged in a stairwell or, you know, something like that takes place. Now, or I, you know, use a faulty piece of equipment that's in a business, and I end up getting maimed because of it. Now, what's the deal with that? Can I go all the way back to manufacturing, or am I just going to be able to go to you?
You're stuck there. If it's your own injury and it's your employer, you're going to be limited to whatever – well, two things. You're going to be limited to whatever recovery you can get through workers' compensation just for the injury itself. But even if you're injured on the job, if you could prove that it's the fault of another of a product, for example, if it's – a lot of times people will have – fingers cut off, or there'll be safety equipment missing from equipment. There is a potential claim against the manufacturer, but let's reverse it. Let's say you're staying at a hotel, and an employee commits a criminal act upon you. Can you hold the hotel responsible? We have cases where someone gets assaulted. Can you hold the hotel responsible for the actions of their employee? Well, then it depends upon several things. Were they within the scope of their employment? Were they on duty or were they off duty? Was there anything that they were doing in furtherance of their employer at the time? In other words, were they making rounds and then they saw you in the parking lot and then assaulted you? Or were they on their day off and they just got drunk and showed up there because they were familiar with the property? So, I mean, there's a lot of tricky issues with, and of course, you don't want to just, if you were assaulted and injured in a parking lot, you would want to bring a claim against the owner of the property. Well, you'd have to prove that they knew that this person had a propensity for criminal activity or that he had prior actions that should have allowed them to realize that he wasn't an appropriate person to hire. If you don't have any evidence of that, and it's the first time that it happened, and he was off duty, and he shows up and he does that, he may not be responsible.
If we bring it to, when we look at the big picture of what we're dealing with here tonight, when you bring it to the school level or you bring it to the church level, what is the responsibility of, we'll put them out there, the church as a whole, may it be the Catholic Church or whatever faith it may be, can't put one under the bus.
Right.
But we know of one that's had many issues. Let's say you have, a pedophile that is a clergy, and he is molesting 5 children, and 30 years later they find out about it, or even 5 years later they find out about it. What is the church's responsibility with that?
Well, there's a public debate on that. That the churches would argue that they're protected and they should be immune from any of these sexual misconduct lawsuits that are being brought against them, just because they're a religious group and it's going to affect their constitutional rights, their freedom of religion will be limited. They've actually made those arguments. Most states don't accept those arguments. So what is their responsibility? Their responsibility is to not shift a clergy from one locale to another every time there's a problem, but to immediately remove a clergy and to take all reasonable steps. And we're going back. It's easy for some of these plaintiffs' lawyers to prove their claims, because if they can show that the church knew that the clergy was committing sexual misconduct 30 years earlier, and then he's been moved to four different parishes since then, and in each one he's assaulted 20 different kids, and all of them have an easy claim against the church.
And then you have the ones that were actually sent out to Arizona somewhere that went through a sexual rehab. Sexual healing rehab or whatever it was. So, I think that what we're looking at here, of course, vicarious liability, just give us a definition again of that, Robert, so people understand what we're talking about tonight.
Yeah, so what we're talking about is we're talking about the responsibility that one person has for the actions of another.
Mm-hmm.
That means that even though the first person was not directly responsible for the injury,
okay,
that even if it wasn't responsible for committing an act, whether they should still be held responsible for the act anyway. And that becomes important when people are catastrophically injured.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, some people would say, well, it's a deep pocket. They're just going after the deep pocket, looking for the deep pocket. But if you employ someone that commits an act of negligence or commits an act that causes significant injury to someone, you deserve it if they were within the course and scope of their employment and they were in furtherance of their employment and you were earning or making money off of their efforts. As long as they were doing reasonably close to what they should have been doing or where they should have been doing it, even though the manner in which they did it wasn't proper, the employer is responsible for those actions. It wouldn't be fair to the family of a quadriplegic child to say to them, well, sure, the kid forgot to put the net out when we dropped your child 150 feet, but that was his own act of negligence. You know, we trained him properly how to do it. It's not our fault that he did that. We did everything we could. He was just a dumb kid. You know, we screened him as best as we could. We're really sorry. Good luck to you.
Now let's bring another equation into this, because I think when you look at the big picture of young people in the jobs that they have, in that particular case, let's say that he just smoked a little red bud and decided to go to work, and now a situation like that occurs. Now it's even worse.
Yeah, the public policy has to say, there has to be a public policy that will give the right of redress to a victim that's significant, especially significant and catastrophic injuries, if they could show that the employee committed the act within the course and scope of their employment. Where it becomes a hairier issue is if the employer doesn't have any way of knowing it, is it fair? And that's where the clash between the protecting big business and not protecting big business comes in. Do you want to deter businesses from bringing their business to Florida if they're in fear that there's a more likelihood that they're going to get sued and get a judgment against them in Florida versus other states? And then big business is going to shop around and look for whichever state is going to protect them the most.
Well, that brings up the next obvious question, because we're going to go to a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the accidents that have occurred on buses, trains, and even the mishap with the plane overshooting its location by about an hour and a half, if you remember that. And they were saying that was because of cell phone use or laptop use, and I think it was laptop use in the cockpit was what they were doing. But, again, what is the liability if something happens and you're texting on the phone?
Yeah, texting's a big issue. We can talk about that when we come back.
And we're going to talk about that right after this message. We'll be back with Robert Kluck. Rock is in recovery. He's on the show tonight. It's a beautiful thing. We'll be back.
If you have a passion for helping people, you may be a perfect candidate to become a certified addiction professional. And there's no better place than the Academy for Addiction Professionals in Fort Lauderdale. The Academy for Addiction Professionals is nationally certified to train you as a certified addiction counselor, certified addiction specialist, or certified behavioral health technician. You can even take online continuing education courses. You will have access to cutting-edge resources, important certification updates, trends in the behavioral health field, and you can network with other addiction professionals. Turn your passion into your profession. Contact the Academy for Addiction Professionals in Fort Lauderdale, 877-824-0001. That's 877-824-0001 or online at www.addictionacademy.com.
My name is Robert Gluck. I am a practicing trial lawyer and have been specializing in helping people who have been injured in all types of accidents for the past 20 years. I handle cases throughout the state of Florida. Recently, the legislature in Tallahassee has changed certain laws, and insurance companies are now taking advantage of those changes, resulting in much lower offers on personal injury cases across the board. It is now necessary to file a lawsuit to get a fair settlement on these cases. Before you settle your case for less than what it's worth, let me review it over the phone or in person with you for free. If there is no recovery, there is no fee. Call now for your free consultation at 954-583-8999. That's 954-583-8999.
The hiring of an attorney is an important decision that should not be based solely upon advertising. Ask for free written information about qualifications and experience.
30 years ago, 60 Minutes traveled to South Dakota to meet Dr. John Willard and to examine his miraculous Willard Water. What they discovered was thousands of people all over the world were using Willard Water to better their health. As 60 Minutes found, the claims seem unbelievable, but the results are undeniable. Scientific studies show that Willard Water can help our bodies absorb more of the vitamins and nutrients we need for good health. They also show that Willard Water helps make cells stronger and more resistant to disease. Willard Water helps the body heal itself. And it does all this without the toxins found in over-the-counter medications. Willard Water is not a fad. It's been helping people for more than 40 years. Become one of the thousands of people who use Willard Water every day. To learn more about the benefits of Willard Water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard Water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
You are listening to the Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show, brought to you by Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. For more information about the show and our sponsors, be sure to visit our website, holisticlifestylesradio.com. That's holisticlifestylesradio.com. Now back to today's show.
Hey, welcome back. I'm John Hollis. And, of course, you're listening to Rockers in Recovery. And, of course, we got Robert Gluck, the attorney, in with us. And Robert Gluck is a personal injury attorney. And, of course, Robert has been around the block as far as legal issues and personal injury and anything that has to do with bodily harm.
I like bodily harm.
You like bodily harm?
No, I just make money off of it.
Well, hey, listen.
I used to put people in prison for it, so that's good.
Hey, listen, you definitely. I remember when you used to put people in prison for it, actually. And then I remember there was a short time period where you tried to help people not go to prison, and then you said, "No, no, I don't want no more of that." You were over the criminal defense thing real quick.
Yeah, well, not for a little while, but you know what? Since 1992, all I've been doing are accident cases or basically any type of a personal injury claim.
So, I mean, you get involved in any criminal?
No. I get involved in cases that have a criminal side to it. Many times if there's a DUI, if there's a DUI manslaughter, there's a criminal case going on at the same time as a civil case. But someday in my future years, my dream job would be to go back to the Dade County State Attorney's Office and prosecute major crimes.
You're kidding me.
Maybe in my 70s when there's nothing else to watch on TV.
There's nothing to watch on TV.
I know. No, there isn't. No, and all kidding aside, but that was my ultimate job was when I worked for Janet Reno as a prosecutor back in 88, 89, 90. 91. I loved being a prosecutor. It's financially unfeasible trying to raise a family at some point, but I'd love to go back there. I love that.
You can't live off that salary, huh?
No, but it'd be a great retirement job.
This brings up a great point here. If you have a legal issue and you go to the courthouse and you have a traumatic experience and you've had an accident or something like that, can you get like a public attorney? Can you get like in a criminal aspect, you can go get a public defender. We call them public pretenders when I was there. The public defenders. Could you get a public defender to be able to help you with a suit of some type if they, you know, if it's like a suit that you're not going to take a partial or take some kind of a commission cut out of it. Can you get somebody to handle it, legal aid or something like that?
You can. There are certain issues that if it's a compelling enough public issue, there are certain public agencies that will take on the case, or they'll file their own petitions and they'll represent somebody. I'm just trying to think of where that would be appropriate. Let's say in the news industry, if a newscaster is being requested to produce a confidential source, you'll find that there are a lot of organizations that will come to the defense that are constitutional agencies that want to protect the constitutional right of freedom of press, and they'll provide free lawyers. Harvard might have a lawyer write an amicus brief in support of that person. So they're, yes, they'll step in like that. But for the most part, if someone has a civil claim, and many people may not realize this, they don't need to have money for a lawyer to help them. If they have a legitimate enough claim, an experienced lawyer will take on their case on a contingency fee. That's the way the common person could get legal representation and equal the playing field, because they can't afford a $300 an hour lawyer like a large corporation.
I was just going to say, because, you know, when you first say to somebody, did you call a lawyer? Their first answer is,
I don't have any money.
I don't have money. What am I going to call a lawyer?
So I wish people would realize that there, for so many areas, obviously, if you get in trouble with the law, you're going to have to pay cash for a call. You have to pay for a criminal lawyer. But if you have any kind of a civil claim, if you think you've been wronged by someone, sexual harassment, wrongful termination, the victim of a product, a defective product that's caused you a problem.
Save this time of year, too.
You don't have to have money for a lawyer. If it's a legitimate case, a lawyer will take the case on a contingency fee, and you want that because the lawyer is invested in your case with his own time, and he's not going to get paid unless there's a recovery. So usually the concept is the lawyer will work harder for you in that scenario.
I need to just break in here for a minute. I need to make this announcement that I forgot to make at the very beginning of the show, because, you know, I was so excited about having you here. The 12th annual Bikers Bash is happening. It's going to be happening this week.
Nice segue.
Yeah, man. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino and the Seminole Tribe of Florida host the, of course, Fort Lauderdale Harley-Davidson 12th Annual Bikers Bash. More than 30,000 bikers on motorcycles ride through South Florida for annual charity ride. All proceeds to benefit the Boys and Girls Clubs of Broward County. Richie Supa is huge, a big part of this event, and, of course, he's going to be down at the Hard Rock on Friday night, and it's going to be starting at, looks like they're having the Friday night bash from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m., and, of course, Friday, December 3rd is registration. Thursday got kickoff party at Bruce Rosemary's Sunrise Harley-Davidson. What's the rest of the stuff? Oh, we got the toy run on, of course, the Toys in the Sun run. That's Sunday, December 5th at 8 a.m. They're leaving from the dog or from the harness track in Pompano. And, of course, that's going to be a great show. There's going to be great bands down there. You got Charlie Daniels Band. They got a bunch of other bands. But if you go to holisticlifestylesradio.com and check out the information there, we're going to be blogging about it over the next 3 days. You're going to be seeing it everywhere. So anybody that wants to be involved, you can actually pick up VIP packages for the whole 4 days that, you know, get you, you know, meeting the bands and hanging out at all the festival events and the whole nine yards. I think it's like $400 for all 4 days, which isn't bad. So if you want more information, holisticlifestylesradio.com, check it out. And let's get back to cell phones. Vicarious liability. I have my cell phone. I'm 90 years old. I'm driving down the street. I just learned how to text. I'm texting, and I drive through the window of a doctor's office and almost kill 5 people.
Sounds like a case I've recently signed up. But you know what? The whole thing with cell phones that's going to become a new wave in litigation is, if it's known to cell phone manufacturers statistically what percentage of people are driving and texting, what could or should they do, or what technology exists that they should have implemented by now that could prevent some of that. For example, they've figured out a way with navigation systems to stop people from trying to type in addresses while they're driving. They've disabled the ability to do that. I mean, you can get around it. Sure, you could, you know, there are probably ways where you could try to get around it. But for the most part, if your car's in drive, you can't type in an address on your navigation screen. If your cell phone is able to track where your location is, which 99% of the new cell phones all have tracking capabilities, shouldn't they also know at what rate of speed the cell phone is moving, and shouldn't they be able to disable texting when people are driving?
Great point.
And the next, and that's going to be, and there are recent articles, and there are some cases coming down the road. There are people that are, you know, killed or quadriplegics or seriously injured. And the party that causes the accident may not have any insurance coverage or any money. And then the plaintiff's lawyers, you might say, well, they're just grasping at straws. Is that really grasping at straws, or is that how things get changed in our society? If a manufacturer is sued in one case and has to pay out a large claim, and it's proven that they had the technology and had the capability of preventing people from texting and driving, should they be responsible? And will their liability in that one case cost them enough money that they'll go ahead and change?
Well, and it's all money.
And add new technology.
It's all money that they didn't want to use. If they had that type of technology and they didn't utilize it, it's because the other, you know, of course, manufacturers of cell phones weren't using it. Because if they put that in, now you might not buy that cell phone because it has that. Now, it would have to be across the board. Now, if that's the case, are you going to run into an issue when you go, well, hey, listen, you know, how can we be held liable when all of the rest of the cell phone companies don't have to have that same technology into effect? So, I mean,
well, but the technology is either going to be in existence or it's not, and right now it is, because they're able to track where you are. In fact, but there have been murders that have been solved, but most people don't even realize
the powers.
Of course, there was this the lawyer that worked for the Rothstein law firm that was murdered a few years ago, a female lawyer in Plantation.
Mm-hmm.
Her girlfriend's husband was charged with the murder, and the way they solved it, he worked, you know, 50, 60 miles away from her, and the railroad tracks, they found the cell phone at near the railroad tracks, like 200 yards away from where he worked. And it turns out that the decedent encouraged her girlfriend to divorce this man, and he was getting his vengeance on her, but he had no idea that he must have grabbed a purse that had the cell phone, and they knew exactly where it was going. So you did
ping off the tower.
It's amazing.
Well, the other, because this brings up a couple of different things. First of all, you mentioned the lawyer Rothstein, correct?
Sure.
And that also brings up our boy Bernie
Madoff.
Yeah. When you start talking about these guys, let's talk about vicarious liability with those particular white-collar crime guys.
Oh, that's what's going to start coming down now, because all of the feeder funds that fed money into these guys were soliciting their own clients. All of their clients were relying on the due diligence of all of the heads of these feeder funds that were then taking that money and investing it in the Bernie Madoff. Some of these feeder funds, even with the Rothstein situation, he had these investment companies that were bringing in the investors that were relying on the due diligence of the company that they went to. So now all of these companies are getting sued. They're being sued by the receivers and the receiver and by the, you know, there's trustees that are trying to recover as much money as they can. But these are all legitimate, responsible parties, because if you're investing your client's money with a Bernie Madoff, should you do a little, I mean, because what I've heard was some of the statements that were produced looked like they were the most ridiculously amateurish typewritten statements that you couldn't believe that people would actually, with substantial money, would believe. The more money people have, it seems, the less wise they are.
I would say it.
The less wise they are. You understand, there was a car dealer in Florida that believed that when he was being sued for not paying $1 million fee to a decorator, And he was told by his lawyer, not only does he not have to pay the decorator who provided service to him that he never paid, but that he got a judgment against her for some $20 million and that he had to advance three times that amount in order to collect the money that's hidden in an account somewhere. Could you imagine that somebody that runs the car empire could actually go for that?
That's just sick.
Yeah, so that's what happened in that case.
Well, the greed factor, you look at...
He showed a fake order signed by a federal judge that may have persuaded... The lawyer showed a fake order to the... But who would ever think that they would recover $20 million when they were being sued for not paying somebody that provided them a service?
And that all came out, correct?
Yeah, and now they're trustees. They're trying to sue all of these feeder companies to help this poor man get his money back.
It's amazing.
Among other people.
Amazing. Well, I mean, that's going to be going on forever.
Yeah, but I don't know who there's many members of that law firm that are going to be. That's a perfect example. If you're a member of that law firm and Rothstein keeps his doors locked and that inner sanctum he had, nobody could get in, and they're going to say, well, we had no way of, that's what their whole defense is. We had no way of knowing what those two, the Villalagos, the lady that was convicted with him, and Rothstein, we had no way of knowing what those two were doing behind those doors. But guess what? If the lawyers are only generating $200,000 a year in revenue and they're being paid $300,000, and the overhead and the expenditures are so obnoxiously high,
when you
have an obligation to question something at some point.
When you got six houses, 14 cars in your driveway, and all of the cars, the cheapest car in your driveway is $100,000.
But the people in the firm, arguably, and this will be the argument at the and I don't know how many lawyers they're going to go after. They may just go after the senior partners. But even if you're a $300,000 a year associate, if you're getting paid $350,000, $400,000 a year, and you're only bringing in $200,000 of work,
or something like that.
Why are they? How are they doing that? Everyone in the legal industry, by the way, in South Florida knew. It was something, but nobody knew what it was. I literally, a year before this happened, was guessing, you know, maybe money laundering or maybe like an illegal gambling operation or something. But everybody knew that firm was not making so much more money than all the other law firms doing the same thing as them. It should have been obvious.
I knew there was a problem when I seen him standing on a milk crate alongside Alonzo Mourning on, Channel 7, telling everybody that, you know, he was a great guy and he had this great... I knew there was an issue.
But now, if you lost $2 million in that Ponzi scheme scam... Should the individual lawyers that worked in that law firm be responsible for paying you the money back? If they weren't involved, but it could be shown that they should have known something was wrong where they were working. But that's the question. If you're an associate and you say to yourself, you know, I didn't know that he was doing any of that. I was working my cases on the other side of the office. I had nothing to do with what he was doing.
Okay. But again, you bring up So you get me crazy because it's like watching news in the morning right now, Robert, because I got to say, if you're sitting there and you're seeing all this crap happening around you,
should you be responsible for something?
Absolutely. If you've hung your name on that door, shouldn't you be responsible?
Well, you know what? The trustee is going to have to decide. He's probably not going to want to pick the lawyers that were on the low end of the totem pole, but I imagine some of the partners that were receiving in bonuses more than they were generating in revenue, they're going to probably go after the partners.
How long was that law firm open?
Not that long, maybe 5 years or so. It was a relatively new firm that went from nothing to one of the largest firms in Florida overnight. Right.
Forbes within a year.
It just shows you how people can be so naive about and just make it, you know, giving away their money like that.
Listen, Robert.
Unbelievable.
Robert, listen, just, you know, give me $100,000 and you'll make back $50,000 within the first month of doing it. And you'll get your principal back within the first month also. You'll make $50,000 profit. I mean, these are the things that they were telling
people. It's like a Frankie Valli song. It's just too good to be true.
Right. These were the things that people were saying to them.
But these people were shelling out so much money. It's ridiculous how much money they were shelling out.
Well,
but now, but I mean, we're talking about, we're kind of going around different areas, but vicarious responsibility for that is the ultimate example. How far down do you go down the totem pole for people that were in the law firm, and how many of them should be responsible for paying some of this money back to these people that lost millions?
Well, let's bring up the family now. Because the family, how about his wife? Is his wife responsible?
Right, and I think they were negotiating what jewelry she could keep and what jewelry she couldn't keep.
Absolutely, which house she was going to get, what car she was going to get, all of that. That's the same thing with Madoff and his wife.
Right.
The
trustee does have a responsibility to get as much of that money recovered as possible. So there's got to be, but they have to have a relate. If she had something that she brought to the marriage, although if, in my recollection, in the Rothstein situation, she didn't exactly have a.
She brought her silicone. That was it.
She didn't exactly have a high-paying job.
She brought the silicone. That was it.
So yes, she should be put back to the position that she was in before. Unfortunately, though, so much of that money has disappeared that they're going to get back pennies on the dollar.
Listen, let's think about this. I mean, these guys are not idiots. I mean, they're idiots because they ended up like they did, and they did. But how much of that money is sitting somewhere in a numbered account somewhere right now that you'll never find?
Who knows? Or, with all the cars that he bought. But you know what? All of these feeder funds, these may be innocent people who were putting their trust in a guy like, well, forget about the Rothstein situation with Bernie Madoff. Everybody knew that if Bernie Madoff was interested in taking your money, that was an honor. And people were begging for him to take their money. But all of these feeder funds that were giving money to him, they got duped just like everyone else.
Absolutely.
But then if you were the victim, you say, hey, but should they have been in a position where they should have done more due diligence because they should have known because they're in the industry?
My money manager, the guy that deals with my portfolio, if he decided to take $30,000 or $100,000 or $300,000 and shoot it to Bernie Madoff and all that money's gone, he's got to be liable.
Well, gotta be is not exactly a legal
well,
term.
That's the Hollis legal term.
I know.
Gotta be.
In fairness, but what if he had no way of knowing and he was an innocent and he was innocently duped and all the statements were fraudulently created and you got to think. I mean, I don't know the industry enough to know what else he could have done.
I'm coming from that point of view of anger to begin with. I'm just sitting here; it hasn't even happened to me, and I'm angry about it.
Right.
Okay. So when you have that person that it really happened to, and they're looking at their money manager or their guy that's their hedge fund guy, their guy that's taking care of their portfolio, and they're wiped out.
Well, then you may not have liability against them for that unless you could show that they either participated in the fraud or should have known. And that's the key. Sometimes it's a jury question, and individual juries, and depending on the facts, might say, this guy should have known, that guy maybe shouldn't have known. This guy was in a position where he could have done a few things to find out. He could have made a few phone calls. He could have questioned a few things that looked a little fishy. And then they can look at the next guy and say, hey, everything he received looked legitimate. There's no way he could have known.
So vicarious liability is the Bernie Madoff standing there and the poor, money manager that made the bad decision to invest your money there but knowingly didn't do it, but he's now in the secondary position where he can be looked at.
Right, and it's tough. It's up to the trustee to decide if they feel that they can prove that there's enough complicity there that he'd ultimately be held responsible for. Because ultimately, if they don't agree to pay, then the trustee would have to sue them, and they would have the burden of proving conspiracy, which means they would have to show that they not necessarily were profiting from it, but they were involved in some way in a step towards in furtherance of it, and that they received some benefit from it.
Okay.
It's going to get hard. Sure, they received a benefit from it, but it comes down. And it's the inner circle. How many people outside the inner circle knew what was going on?
And here comes, I mean, listen, you got a guy that was, the king of NASDAQ. The king. And you're right. Everybody wanted to give him their money. But here's the amazing part. How many, you cannot tell me that this guy did not conspire and sit down with some people and say, hey, listen, man, this is what I got going on. I know too much from my past to know how that stuff works and understand, man, that there was somewhere, some room, 10 or 15 dudes that were up there and that were on Wall Street that said, you know something, Bernie, I think we can get away with this.
But the plaintiff pursuing that claim, the victim who lost their money, has the burden of proving that. Granted, it would only be by a preponderance of the evidence, but they would have, and then sometimes they'll find an email here and there. And I think in the Rothstein situation, I know right after, as the facts were coming out in the paper over the time, there were some emails that went up and back where it said, hey, you know, you should, what are we going to do about this problem, or we need to take care of that. And there's some innuendos here and there where they're going to probably tie in some of these feeder companies.
Well, the senior,
they need some sort of a smoking gun there to prove that they had some way to know.
Listen, when that whole situation occurred, one of the senior partners was like right on the TV saying, hey, listen, I don't know nothing.
They let Channel 7 do a tour of the law firm. Remember, they brought them in and they look, this is the door with the double locks. Only she could let people in. We couldn't even come in here if we wanted to. We had no way of knowing what they were doing in here. But then, and here we go back to where we started from. Can you just turn your back and turn your blind eye on a situation that you're profiting from and saying, well, I didn't know?
Again, making $200,000 a year and you know, new clients, and making $300,000 a year when you don't deserve making $300,000 a year. You should be making $80,000 a year.
Right, and the folks in the law firm, from what I've been told, should have known that the firm wasn't generating, the profit structure didn't make sense. It just didn't make sense how these people were generating as much as they were.
So in the end, I mean, let's think about this. In the end, nobody's going to win, really. I mean,
what, a Lamborghini dealer won?
Well, he won. But I mean,
not going to make him give back his money.
But now let's talk about this in the fact that if everybody got together, it's going to, you know, because the SEC is involved, the Securities and Exchange Commission is involved, you're going to need a certain type of lawyer. You couldn't handle that type of case, or you could?
No, if there was a probably what would happen is all of the victims would get together in a situation
right,
like that, because you're going to have significant costs, and in many cases it's going to be a trust. The law firm went bankrupt. So what they're trying to do is the trustee, in this case it's a former judge by the name of a retired judge, Stetton is his name, is the trustee. His job is to try and get money back for all of the victims. So in effect, he's their lawyer, if you will, or he'll hire lawyers. The lawyer will be hired by the trustee to prosecute these claims against whatever individuals or companies they think they can recover money from.
But
it's been real slow. They haven't started doing it yet.
It's an amazing process. And again, the Securities and Exchange Commission, now you need a Securities and Exchange lawyer, so I'm sure the judge has to understand that type of law and has to understand it's a mess. But we started out tonight, and we've been talking about vicarious liability, and this is all about it. I mean, all the things that we've talked about tonight, from cell phones to Bernie Madoff, to of course, you sign in the waiver at your kid's school, to sign in the waiver at, of course, over at the fun park. These are all things that the secondary component can come in, and you could end up not getting what you deserve out of it.
Right, and many states are different in how they handle these situations. So in any situation that comes up, if anybody feels that they've been wronged in any way, they should consider contacting a lawyer. If someone called me and they needed redress of any kind, even if it's something I didn't do, I'll know, hey, this is something for a civil rights lawyer. Hey, this is something for an employment discrimination lawyer. Hey, this is something. So having a lawyer is a resource, because people don't know even sometimes what the category is of what they need help with. So I'm the type of lawyer that they could call with those type of general questions, and I can direct them to the right place.
And any other thing is, folks, it's a free call.
Yeah. Well, maybe a dollar.
A dollar. Well, no, you know, whatever it costs you to call. Whatever it costs you to call, baby. And he's got an 877 number. It's 877 Gluck Law, G-L-U-C-K, Law, L-A-W. So it won't cost you nothing.
Right, and I really enjoy talking with people. So every day I take phone calls all day long from people that have general questions, and sometimes it's something that I can help them with, and sometimes it isn't. But I give them the right answer to get them directed in the right place.
And you'll really enjoy Robert, because when he puts you on hold, you'll hear things like, you know, the Touch of Grey from the Grateful Dead, and Roxanne from the Police. So, I mean, he's got some pretty cool hold music there. So, hey, you got to understand, folks, that we're having some fun and we're enjoying life. And guess what? You know, something Rockers in Recovery wants to thank Robert Gluck for being on the show with us. We also were able to sit here and have some great conversation in regards to law issues and things that come up in my head. And trust me, you know, my head has a lot rolling around in it, so I got a lot of questions. So Robert was able to answer them tonight. We had a great, you know, great show tonight. I look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
Next Friday. So it'll be sometime next week we'll do the show. It'll be aired next Friday. But this show tonight is going to be re-aired Friday at 2 o'clock. We'll be announcing it and sending it out on all the rest of the places that have the show playing. So we look forward to having you come back to us tomorrow at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We'll be hanging out live right here at 1470 AM. And we're Rockers in Recovery on the Holistic Lifestyles Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. I'm John Hollis, out for the night.
Thank you for listening to the Holistic Lifestyles Radio Show. This program is sponsored by Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. Join us every day right here on AM 1470 WNN. You can also find us on our Twitter podcast, Facebook, and blogtalkradio.com. For more information about the show and our sponsors, be sure to visit our website, HolisticLifestylesRadio.com. That's HolisticLifestylesRadio.com. All broadcast rights to this program are the property of Holistic Lifestyles Radio Incorporated. Rebroadcast of any portion of this program without express written consent is prohibited. The opinions expressed on this sponsored program are strictly those of its hosts and callers and are not necessarily those of this station, staff, management, or sponsors.
Free concert, Rockers in Recovery Memorial Day Weekend Concert, May 28th from 1:30 to 6:30 p.m. Featuring Ricky Bird, guitarist of the NYC Hit Squad and formerly of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, along with Taysom Seldon, bassist of Todd Rundgren and Utopia, Mick Jagger, and Celine Dion. Plus, three other great bands, Johnny B and the Road Dogs, Keep Coming Back Band, and Rhetoric. Come out and join us at the First Step Sober House Memorial Day Free Concert at 450 Southwest 2nd Street, Pompano Beach. To find out more, go to rockersinrecovery.com or call 877-799-8255.